Welcome to Rhode Island Avenue Radio, where we'll talk about news, education, and opportunities for small businesses on the Rhode Island Avenue Main Street and in Washington, D.C. I'm Michelle Yancey.
And I'm Kyle Todd. Welcome to Rhode Island Avenue Radio. Good morning and welcome to another episode of Rhode Island Avenue Radio. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Kyle. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well.
It's beautiful fall weather. Election day is almost here.
It is, and early voting has started.
For those of you who live in the Ward 5 area, Turkey Thicket opens today, Friday, October 28th. And by the time this broadcasts, it will be the official election day. So no matter how you're going to vote, be sure to get out and vote. And that's all I'm allowed to say about that.
That's right.
Want to thank our sponsors, the Department of Housing and Community Development and the Department of Small and Local Business Development. It is their sponsor, their grant dollars for us that allows us to produce and bring you Rhode Island Avenue Radio. So thanks to DHCD and DSLBD. Let's see. Lots of stuff to talk about. Halloween this weekend. Yay.
Yes. Good weather for that, too.
Perfect weather for that this weekend. So SafeTrack, the closing of the Rhode Island Avenue Metro Station begins tomorrow, October 29th, Saturday, October 29th. And that means lots of trauma getting downtown.
We're not going to know the true trauma until Monday.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it won't rain.
Yes, the weather will
be
nice.
The weather will be nice, so we'll see.
But we've got a brand new space on Rhode Island Avenue to help solve your commuting woes. If you are in a position to be able to telecommute, not only, obviously, can you telecommute from your home, but if you need to be out of your home, there's a new place open at 2316 Rhode Island Avenue called the Five Points Business Center. And it's managed by an organization called SB Works. And it is a great new telework space. They've got daily rentals you can get for a desk and internet access, high-speed internet access. There's a conference room available. There's shared workspace available. It is, you know, just a couple of doors down from Zeke's Coffee, which everybody
conveniently
wins.
Conveniently located, yes.
And then, you know, when it's time for lunch, you've got Good Food Market, you've got Zeke's, you've got Carl's Subs, yep. You've got Manny and Olga's, a couple of other places to grab stuff from on Rhode Island Avenue, plus, you know, Uber Eats comes out this way. And then, you know, for happy hour time, you are not without options here. Yes. Between Nito and Carolina Kitchen and TKO Burger. And
it's Friday, so the public option.
Fridays, the public options are open. Yep. Lots of opportunities for teleworking here on Rhode Island Avenue. If you don't want to try to bike or walk or bus or what have you down Rhode Island Avenue to get to downtown. So check out SB Works at sbworksdc.org. Again, they are located at 2316 Rhode Island Avenue Northeast, just right next door to Rita's Ice Cream. And I know everybody knows where Rita's Ice Cream is. Even though they're not open for the season anymore, SB Works and Five Points Business Center is open to help you out there. Okay, now it's time to check in with Philip from Good Food Market. Philip, how you doing today?
Good, Kyle. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. What is going on down there? Y'all got some great mums out in front of the shop these days.
Yeah, and there's still a chance to get some last-minute pumpkins if you're a carver. We got some fall plants out there, and we're starting to see some of the fall vegetables come in. We have organically managed cauliflower, both white and cheddar cauliflower, which unfortunately is not a crossbreed between cheddar cheese and cauliflower.
Man. You had me excited there for a minute.
I know. I hate to burst the bubble, but I feel as a conscious retailer that it's important to recognize that this is a color. It is not a flavor, although the yellow cauliflower does have its own special flavor to it. It is not cheddar cheese flavor.
It is not.
Cheddar cheese sold separately.
I'm actually glad about that.
Well, as representing the cheese haters of America, or at least of Ward 5, I'm glad that it doesn't taste like cheese.
And I should add that just prior to us getting started this morning, Michelle also disclosed that she's never seen any of the Harry Potter movies.
Gosh, she's putting me on blast. This is true. Okay.
It's like I don't know her.
I don't eat cheese, and I have never seen Harry Potter.
I don't know how we're friends.
More details to come.
Okay, anyway, so it's
after
not...
After binge watching.
Right.
It's not automatic cauliflower au gratin.
Not automatic.
Okay.
But it can be done, quite simply. And I guess from a caloric and nutritional standpoint, that's probably better as well. But yeah, we're seeing all that great stuff come through from Pennsylvania. Some great broccolis, root vegetables are starting to come through this week. We added horseradish root to our mix. It's right there next to the ginger, and this is used in all sorts of different recipes. You can spice up your soups. You can grind it up for horseradish sauce. But our favorite is fire cider. And for those not familiar with fire cider, you can go to goodfoodmarkets.com and click on the banner on top to check out this week's newsletter and get a great recipe. This is sort of a traditional remedy for all sorts of things, especially those colds and sniffles that we get as the weather starts to turn colder. And it can be really anything. Can go into it. You can make your own flavors from what you have on hand or what you like. It's a mix of root vegetables like garlic, horseradish, ginger, adding spices and herbs that you may have around the house, turmeric, star anise, even rosemary is very good. And it's just a very healthy mix of herbs and vegetables sort of cooked into a tea, and you use it to just drink it. It's the kind of home remedy would be a spoonful of fire cider to help sort of clear out the sinuses and get things working there again in the respiratory system. But it's also great for salads, salad dressings. A little bit on top of anything that you want to give a little kick to. So we're excited to see horseradish coming through. And, of course, we've got our great deals. This week's sales are some great candies for Halloween. If you're looking for the family or to give out to trick-or-treaters, we're also running a special on everything you need to make a great pasta dish at home, Field Day organic spaghetti, both gluten and gluten-free, Parmesan cheeses, pasta sauces, some great salad dressings for your greens. I also wanted to mention that Oasis Community Partners, our nonprofit, has published our first report that we've created in conjunction with our UDC data team, which is a partnership that we've been that's been active for the better part of a year now. And recently we just published our first series of interactive web maps. So you can visit, again, goodfoodmarkets.com/OCP for Oasis Community Partners, or click through on the website there. And there's a short video kind of outlining how to navigate the maps and what they show. And we're really trying to take a look at the effects that food access has on diet-related preventable diseases, the most common of which are obesity, diabetes, and heart disease, but also the way that economic indicators and even violent crime can play a role in inhibiting the wealth and health of many communities here in D.C. So as we work to develop solutions for those problems, it's also important to understand where they are and what they are, how they manifest. So visit goodfoodmarkets.com, check out the latest sales and specials, and click through the Oasis Community Partners link to check out our latest report.
You know, it's one of the many, many things that I love about Good Food Markets, Philip, is that, you know, in addition to providing the really good food at a really good value and a good variety of choices, you guys are really part of the community, and you're really working to reach everybody in the community, and I really appreciate that.
Absolutely. I mean, it's core to what we do. For example, in our last cooking class we had earlier this month at the brand new Woodridge Public Library, which if you haven't been, it's just so beautiful.
It is.
They've got great equipment there. It's fantastic to see them in a space befitting the great people there. But we had almost 30 people there, about 8 kids, 20 adults, and we spent almost 2 hours cooking, talking about food, talking about the different health benefits of some of the delicious fruits and vegetables that we can get here locally. And, you know, it's important. It's something that everyone can do. And increasingly, we're finding that time is almost as important, and in some cases more important than anything else in determining how and what people eat. The next set of maps that we're working towards will look directly at this, and some of our preliminary analysis shows that there's households in D.C. that are spending 26 hours or more per week just getting to and from work.
Yeah.
When you start to think about the effect that that plus the actual work that you're doing plus, you know, now you try to find time to go to the store, buy things, take them home, cook them, save them, you know, all of this, it really adds up. And so we're trying to find those strategies that will help everybody, but especially folks who have a lower income, and we're finding that they are the most strapped for time as well, to really be able to incorporate a healthy diet and cooking at home. It's the easiest, most surefire way to control caloric intake, salt intake, fat intake. Studies for years have shown that just cooking at home will support a healthier diet. So come on down to Good Food Markets, 2006 Rhode Island Avenue. Check out what we've got, and go home and make a meal.
Sounds great, Philip. Give everybody the website.
It's www.goodfoodmarkets.com. You can find us on Twitter at GoodFoodDC, or give us a call at 202-248-8494.
Great. Thank you so much, Philip. Have a good week.
Thanks, Kyle. Thanks, Michelle. Take care now.
All right. Bye-bye.
So today we're going to be talking about something a little bit more esoteric in the form of businesses and economic development on Rhode Island Avenue, but incredibly critical. So particularly in areas like ours, Michelle, where Rhode Island Avenue is an emerging business district, we've got lots of empty business spaces. We are actively recruiting businesses to fill. We are building an exciting energy with not only the neighbors that surround our commercial district, but just the types of businesses that are coming to open on Rhode Island Avenue. But one of the critical components is taking into consideration how the area looks. And we can't go out and fix all the businesses, the facades all at once. But one important critical component is art. And having a great interactive art component to revitalization is just really such a spark and such a Kickstarter. So I'm really glad to bring on today we've got three guests joining us today about this. We've got Mr. Stephen Thompson from the Van Allen Institute, Natalie Campbell and Jose Ruiz from the Furthermore Artist Collective. And Michelle, you've already been chatting with these folks, so take it away.
Well, I haven't met all of these folks yet, but there have been a couple of other artists that I have chatted with. So welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
We're going to start with Stephen today because he is from the Van Allen Institute. Stephen, can you let our listeners know a little bit about the Institute, what its purpose is, its mission?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Van Allen Institute has been in existence for over 120 years, and throughout that time we've been hosting design competitions and public programs, always with an interdisciplinary lens, using design as a jumping-off point, but connecting urban design with architecture and outward, collaborating with artists, anthropologists, and people from all fields to gain a better understanding of the city and how everyday people are impacted by the built environment. What do our surroundings mean for our minds and bodies? So we were drawn to this project in collaboration with the D.C. Office of City Planning because we wanted to better understand how these neighborhoods in D.C. Are changing through demographic shifts in zoning. And by engaging directly with the community alongside, furthermore, we're able to better understand how these changes affect them. So hearing from the stakeholders and what they see for their community in the future can potentially allow us to address these changes moving forward.
So you talked about design competitions. How does that work?
Yeah, so the design competition we consider to be a model for tackling urgent, pressing challenges that affect our environments, ecologies, and different populations. And so examples of other competitions that we've hosted recently in your city are Memorials for the Future, which was in partnership with the National Park Service and the Office of Planning. And that was looking at ways that memorials could be considered for the future in terms of, could they be more mobile? Could they be temporary? And how could they appeal to different populations and also urgent concerns? Most people consider memorials on the National Mall, which is pretty much full at this point, to be guys who died in a war, or people who have really had an impact on the country but aren't necessarily remembered in a daily way. And so the submissions that were among the finalist proposals for the Memorials for the Future competition were looking at issues such as climate change, and the winner was a memorial to future lost landscapes to sea level rise. And so it was a really poetic expression of what a memorial can be that came through this model of a design competition that might not necessarily come from an average brainstorming session among designers and planners. Other design competitions Van Allen has hosted recently include, in New Orleans, the Future Ground was the title of a competition that invited interdisciplinary teams to consider how the New Orleans region can look at vacant land after decades of neglect in certain neighborhoods, but also especially after the destruction wrought by Hurricane Katrina. And with many lots still vacant or underused, this competition generated proposals for how we can bring economic development back to areas that have otherwise been kind of considered as blight. So reframing. And so that's how we view the design competition, as a way to reframe challenges. A vacant lot doesn't have to be blight. A memorial doesn't have to be granite on a grass lawn. And so that's how we conceive of the design competition. And then often the results of a competition don't necessarily have to be a built project. Sometimes we do, say, like an installation or that sort of thing, or it could be a new park. But we also generate ideas through design competition. So, for example, we collaborated with the National Park Service over recent years on another project called National Parks Now that asked how National Park could invite and be welcoming to different groups of people. I think that this Park Service came to understand that a lot of their audience was aging and needed kind of a boost of new audiences. And so they came to Van Allen, and we selected interdisciplinary teams that weren't necessarily, of course, designing new national parks, but designing mechanisms for engaging local populations more. And so that could be in the form of wayfinding in terms of how people near a park are drawn to it more easily, and also developing programs for youth that can connect them and make them feel like they're growing up with a park, that sort of thing. So at the center of all of this is, of course, public space, and you'll find that as well to be very much a theme throughout this project that we're doing right now in Washington in conjunction with Furthermore.
Okay, well, that sounds very interesting. It goes to show that art is many things. A lot of people think of art as just something, a painting or a sculpture, but art is many things. So, Jose and Natalie, please, one of you tell us about, or both of you, just not at the same time, tell us about the Furthermore Collective.
Yes. Well, Furthermore started in Washington, D.C. in 2010, and it was first sort of built around the idea that we could support artists in during their stage of production. So it started out as first a print shop, then we started offering consulting services, exhibition services. But at the same time, the people that really make up the group are curators and artists, art historians, and we all teach. We all teach in various art departments around the D.C. area. So at some point, we decided that we wanted to expand our audience and connect to a broader community. So we opened a bigger space where we started doing a lot of programming. And the programming was really targeted to new audiences. So whether it was sort of a pre-emerging artist or people that hadn't been exposed to contemporary art. So we did that for a few years. And over the past year, we sort of remodeled and looked at our practice as a form of sort of a cross between social practice, public art, consulting, but also design in the way that Stephen mentioned, right? Looking at design and how that affects the cities. So it's been really interesting over the how it's changed this project over the 6 years for us. But we have several teams, and the core team for exhibitions or projects of this scale is Natalie Campbell, who's here with us. James Huckenpaller, Patrick McDonough, and myself.
Do you want to add anything, Natalie?
Yeah, just to say I'm the newest member of Furthermore, and I'm also the one that's lived in D.C. the shortest period of time, so I've been here for 5 years. But we have the studio that Jose mentioned is at 52 O Street in that artist building, and we have a range of experiences and individual practices. James is a sixth-generation Washingtonian and works in new media primarily. Patrick McDonough is a sculptor who also does public art and social practice projects. I am an art historian and a curator primarily, but I do all kinds of exhibition making outside of traditional types of exhibition spaces. For example, I started an artist-run weather station when I was living in New York, which is where I first met Jose. So, and Jose has a range of experience that he can speak to himself, but has also done placemaking art projects in New York and in other places.
Did you say artist-run weather station?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We got to hear more about that.
No, that's unrelated to this project. But I'm saying that all of us, you know, all of us are interested in thinking outside the box about what art can be. So I think it made us...
That definitely is. So... Explain what the, and anyone can take this question, what is the relationship between the Van Allen Institute and the Furthermore Artist Collective? And maybe tell our listeners what an artist collective is. I mean, it sounds like I know what it is, maybe, but.
Sure, yeah. I'll take the artist collective side. An artist collective nowadays is really a group of artists, but it can also be non-artists, right, that are working in art projects. That I really believe in collaboration, believe in sharing ideas, and they're really working towards this idea where we can make art without an individual artistic name connected to it. Right? Traditionally, we see artists like, let's say, Jeff Koons. You know, people know the name and the work. But a lot of artist collectives operate in a gray space, where we believe the projects and the art should come first, and then sort of the makers come after. But it's different than sort of an artist cooperative, right? Some people may confuse that, and that's more of an older model from the 60s and 70s where people paid membership to be in an organization. So artist collectives these days are really more organic, more social. It's not uncustomary for art members to come in and out, and it's not unusual for collectives to grow or change cities or even change the scope of their practice through the process, right?
Okay. So, Stephen, what's the relationship with Van Allen and the Furthermore Collective for this newest project?
Hey, so Van Allen got involved in this project through a grant through the D.C. Office of Planning that was sponsored by the Kresge Foundation. And with all of our programs, we always do that with a partner organization. And so Van Allen is based in New York City. We do projects in cities all over the world. And so partnering with an interdisciplinary collective, like Furthermore, was such a fantastic fit because, bringing together people from different fields, of course, brings such a wealth of ideas to the table than, say, like a lot of design projects that are less maybe community-oriented are often just architects and urban planners speaking among each other. And so this way, working with Furthermore and Furthermore in hand, working directly with the community allows for a really special attentiveness to individuals' concerns in the neighborhoods.
So, Natalie, what are some of the exciting projects? I'm looking at a flyer that you brought in about share a memory that connects you to your neighborhood.
Yeah, so to explain a little bit more about the parameters under which Van Allen engaged Furthermore, they had they had agreed with Office of Planning that they were going to do placemaking projects in actually two sites in D.C. related to sound and place. And that was sort of a very broad parameter, and they asked us, what would you guys do with the medium of sound? So we don't only work in sound, we're not only sound artists, but we took that and ran with it, and we said, and the neighborhood that was initially under discussion with Office of Planning is Mid-City East. And with a specific focus on the intersection of Florida North Capitol, Bloomingdale and Eckington neighborhoods, but, we were just interested in what does that even mean, Mid-City East? That's a giant...
It's a very nebulous
area. It's a planning term. It's a lot, you're encompassing a lot of different people, a lot of different ideas of place there. So our idea was to create an intersection mixtape. So to create almost an audio portrait of community. I mean, again, acknowledging that this is a temporary public art project. So, how can you do something that engages an area as big as Mid-City East in a short period of time? So we thought one way would be to embrace kind of randomness and to do random audio sampling and create almost a sound collage as a portrait of the neighborhood. And through a process of discussions with Van Allen, Office of Planning, Van Allen's been meeting with members of the community and advisory board since July. And they brought us in September, and then we kind of met who they met, and then, we have gone on to grow our own contacts in the neighborhood. We created a whole bunch of different mechanisms for gathering sound samples from people that live here. So one way, the first thing that we did is we set up a bunch of phone numbers where people can call in and answer questions like, what sound would you like to hear more of around here? And what do you call the place where you live? Acknowledging that even to call something a neighborhood, different people have, we've heard so many different answers to this
and
question.
And people have different names for the same neighborhood.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, just last Sunday, I was out at the Bloomingdale Farmers Market, and I don't think, maybe three people gave me the same answer. It was Uptown. It was Shaw. It was Bloomingdale. Right. It was Trucks and Circle. I mean, of course, we're also getting folks from LaDroite and from other areas coming to the farmers market, but it just gives you a sense of the different ways that people identify with place. So we just wanted to give a voice to that. So what we're going to do in terms of Office of Planning has, wants to have a placemaking intervention. So on November 12th at the lot at Bates and North Capitol Street, we are going to set up a listening party, a kind of soundscape in the empty lot there. And we have different sculptures that we've created that invite people to come and sit and listen to different channels of sound. I should say that we've been gathering voices from people, but we've also been going out on sound walks. And Van Allen Institute has gone on two public sound walks with us where we have a group of people and we ask people to search out different types of sounds that they want to listen for. So what sounds like music? What sounds like noise? What sound makes you feel safe? What sound do you associate with home, you know, and just kind of listening for these very broad kind of sounds. What sound do you associate strongly with this place? And then we kind of take notes on what people think about what we gather. And so we've been taking all sorts of clips. So we've been doing public sound walks, and then we have basically the different sound stations in the final piece will play different channels of these different types of sounds that we've collected. So it'll almost be on the 12th.
Okay.
So it'll almost be like experiencing an audio mix in space.
So will you have different booths or something set up for each channel?
There are kind of like sculptures that people can sit on. And okay. So as you move from one sculpture to another, you'll experience the way that the sound mix. And then the final piece of it, which was important to us from the beginning, is that we're making an audio remix where all these things that we've sampled, these three different channels, will be randomly remixed into a CD that we're going to give away to people. So we'll give it away on the site, and we'll also drive around the truck with a neighborhood right a little bit before the event, like a Pied Piper or an ice cream truck handing out CDs and trying to get people to come. So we've been going into all kinds of, as many spaces as we can in this short period of time. You know, I've gone to community meetings. We've met with high school kids from Dunbar and McKinley Tech. We've taken out groups of people. So, I mean, to give you an example of what
you have
of that
some sound, right?
Sounds like, yeah. I mean, so, for example, Curry Hackett, who is a D.C. native and the graphic designer for this project through the Van Allen Institute, also happens to play trombone and is really interested in the built environment. So he went out with James Huckenpaller, and they recorded Curry playing trombone on a walk from the from the NoMa Metro Station to the Rhode Island Avenue Metro Station and all along the Met Branch Trail, where he was kind of playing against traffic and cars and train sounds and kind of riffing off what he heard. So this is an example of that piece.
Very interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, just to kind of maybe as a counterpoint to that, to give you an example of some of the survey information that people have given us, when we ask people, what sound would you like to hear more of around here? These are the types of responses that we gathered.
I think it'd be cool to have more. So you know how like Chinatown has like live jazz bands and people playing drums and stuff like that? We don't have that by our metro. I don't want that.
30 years.
The sound of breathing.
Silence. That would be nice. This is really loud in here.
We could use some drummers around.
Let's get it on.
Just more laughter, more music, you know. I like when I hear jazz, and, you know, that's something I like about New Orleans. You know, you can walk around and hear music, you know, bands. Some areas up near DuPont Circle, they have individuals out playing, whether it be a saxophone or those types of things really are soothing for me.
Yeah, that's great.
The sound of it.
That's very interesting, and it shows you how people think differently. We heard silence and then drums. The next person wanted drums.
Yeah, absolutely. The idea that there are these extreme differences, but also, you know, within all the kind of different experiences of place and all the different names that we have for it, we're also fundamentally, everyone is living in this area with this, you know, extremely busy thoroughfare, right, cutting through it in a couple of ways. And so how can sense also create some sound and sense, and our responses to it create some bridges and some commonality. So hopefully in that, the samples that we've given, you'll hear a little bit of a poetic response through the music, but you'll also hear, as you know, as many voices as we could gather from folks that live here contributing to a mix.
Very, I really enjoyed that trombone. It sounded almost like the beginning of a movie.
Right. Right. Well, as we were talking a little bit about, before we started recording, you were talking about how it was really playing off of the sounds of traffic, the ambient noise around him, and you could see that, you could hear that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you couldn't see, you could hear.
No,
that.
You could hear. Right, right. So Jose and Natalie, how did you all get into this type of art? I wouldn't necessarily have thought of this as art, but as I'm learning, mm-hmm. there's
I'll
lots.
Let, I'll
of
let
art.
Jose take it first.
Yeah, for us, I think all of us have an interdisciplinary sort of background, but I think one of the strengths of working in a collective is that we can have a tremendous amount of dialogue, and each of us can push each other to things we wouldn't have done before or things we weren't maybe comfortable with in the past, right? And I think that really speaks when Natalie was speaking some of her backgrounds, you know, like James, as a good example for this project, he built an app, a software application that will do the remixing. And that really came from this idea when we were discussing the idea that Patrick said, like, what would happen if we press shuffle in the neighborhood, right? Or on this idea of crossing the street, like, what would happen if we press shuffle on an intersection? And then James just riffed off that and said, well, I can build an app that will automatically shuffle these different sounds if we can put them into categories, right? And then for me, and I think, and Natalie too, is this idea that we like challenges, and we don't like to be repetitive, in most things that we do. So if there's ever an opportunity that seems peculiar and unusual, we're usually the people that will say, yes, we'll do it.
You know? We're all in.
So, I mean, and that's kind of the part of the creative process. I mean, for me, we keep doing things because it challenges, you know, kind of how we can use our creativity and our artistic process. And I think the more we keep pushing it, it keeps taking us to these places that we probably wouldn't have imagined, you know. So for me, it's really satisfying to take on these projects because it really shows how art, contemporary art, can operate not just in the art market and not just in museums and galleries. And we're seeing that across the world. So we're also excited to, you know, to have been picked by Van Allen Institute. But I think it's really interesting to when we can actually take artwork outside of the conventional boxes that they normally sit in. So for that, I mean, for us, it's sort of that's the drive, right?
How about you, Natalie? How did you get involved in this?
Well, I would just say I think all of us also have years of experience working, you know, not only teaching, but also working in galleries, nonprofit spaces, museums. I actually met Jose when he was curating a biennial in Queens. And what was that, Jose, 2009? We met in 2007 or something. Just we've all been exposed to so many different aspects of the ways that artists practice today. Jose directs the curatorial practice program at MICA now. I worked at a New York gallery for 6 years, and I worked a lot with multimedia artists. And like I said, you do one little thing and it leads to another, and you meet people that are doing all kinds of sound, sensory, environmental, urban ecology projects, and it just inspires you to think a little bit differently and to kind of think, how can I contribute to the conversation? So it's really rewarding to work with a group of people that all have these different areas of expertise and have done so many different things, because, you know, I can't build sound listening stations, but Patrick can, you know.
Right.
And
right.
So it's like you become a super team.
Yeah, I think that's really great in any type of environment, not just in art, mm-hmm. but getting the thinkers together and feeding each other's creative juices.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, Stephen, tell us how listeners can find out about the Van Allen Institute, should they need to, artists or anyone.
Right. So you can head to vanallen.org. That's VANALEN.ORG. And you can find out all the information about this wonderful upcoming project. You can sign up for our newsletter to find out more about it. And then you can also register on our website so you have a reminder. Of course, these events are free and open to the public, and you can also follow us on social media, of course, on Facebook, just search Van Allen Institute, and on Twitter and Instagram, our handles are VAN_ALEN, and it's been wonderful, actually, watching this very interactive project from afar and by the response on social media by locals and seeing what they're posting on the sound walks that have been conducted, and then also the anticipation within the community as these public programs and launch events move forward.
That sounds great, and Van Allen Institute obviously doesn't just do things here in D.C. They do things, I would imagine, all over.
Right. So we are based in New York. We're right by the Flatiron Building on West 22nd Street. And among our upcoming initiatives, if any listeners are based in New York or will be visiting in the weeks ahead, we do a fall festival and a spring festival of public programs that are interdisciplinary. They range from a more traditional set of panel discussions to activities that are really out in the field and on the street in New York City. And so our upcoming festival is called Mandate. And it's, of course, looking at the intersection of the election in time with this kind of monumental democratic moment. And so how do public policy and public participation shape our city is what the series of events is looking at. And so we're using multiple models for asking that. We have a discussion that's looking at the intersection of the arts and real estate. It's called Strange Bedfellows. And we also are doing a tour this upcoming Sunday with an author who wrote a book called Trumpitecture, and it's looking at the impact Donald Trump had on the New York City skyline, which beyond kind of the craze surrounding the election is actually a really useful tool for understanding how people navigate the zoning restrictions and variances and also the changing political regimes in a city through the lens of Donald Trump, who was pretty adept at navigating that and has a very clear mark throughout Midtown Manhattan and other parts of the city. And we're also doing looking back on historical angles. We have a tour looking at, in Lower Manhattan, evidence of the intersection of early politics and colonial America and how that impacted the lives of the first Black Americans and how those issues that were kind of made certain people's lives disadvantaged are still present very much today, hundreds of years later. And so, it's multiple techniques for looking at how public policy and everyday people can help shape their city from the election and beyond.
Well, great. Thank you for that information. And Jose and Natalie, if people want to get in touch with you to see or hear your art or possibly artists to join your collective, maybe you could tell us how they could do that.
Well, the first thing I'd say is definitely come out and join us on November 12th from 12 to 3 p.m. for the listening party. And there's information on our project is actually hosted on the Van Allen website. So vanallen.org/projects/echo has the two projects that Van Allen is managing for the city of D.C., including ours. And you can email us at intersectionmixtape@gmail.com for more information about this project.
And how about furthermore, if they are just interested in other furthermore, because you all do things outside of the Van Allen Institute, I would imagine.
Yeah, the best place to go would be www.furthermorellc.com. And there you can see a range of the projects we've done, you know, past press clippings, as well as some of the services that we provide.
Okay, great. Well, thank you all so much for joining us today. This has been very informative.
Thanks so much for having us.
All right. Well, that wraps up another episode of Rhode Island Avenue Radio. Thank you all for joining us today. Have a happy Halloween.
Don't forget to vote.
Don't forget to vote. Thanks again to our sponsors, the Department of Small and Local Business Development and the Department of Housing and Community Development. And we will see you again next week.
Right.